Well, I'm Kathy. I'm a compulsive overeater, and it's so nice to be here. What an honor to speak. I love this group. And I just kept saying before I started to breathe out self-centeredness and breathe in divine, right? So thy will not mine be done. I love hearing a good speaker. And the thing is, I don't have to be the best one. I just have to tell my story. We all have a story. So, mine's just a little older than some people's. So while I'm telling my story, I lived in a couple of different places. I grew up in New York and I lived in Tennessee, and now I'm out here. And I've noticed that sometimes when I go back to certain memories and time periods, I lapse into the accent. So it's just so you know. So I started in OA in January 3rd, 1985. So I've been in OA for 41 years. I never considered myself leaving. But I certainly didn't stay abstinent the whole time. There were times I wasn't working much of the many of the steps, if any. There were other times where I was very, very active. So this is just what happened to me. So I was born on Long Island in New York. I'm the seventh of eight kids. My parents didn't finish high school. They both smoked. My father was a raging alcoholic, and I don't say that lightly. I try not to share too many details because I don't want to trigger people. But the first thing I faced when I got sober and abstinent, was I went inpatient twice, and a lot of the pain and feelings and underlying issues had to do with some terrible, terrible abuse. But one thing I realized looking back, we had each other. We had a big family and we had extended family all around us. And I had teachers that were wonderful mediators of this, what my family lacked. I did well in school. I had healthy role models with teachers. I loved music. I watched a lot of shows like The Waltons and Little House on the Prairie, and I learned. I really did. They became like my healthy parents. And I wanted that life. And I realized later that me and my kids and my husband were like going to churches and singing the songs and doing things like they did in those shows. So I thought, oh, you brought me a husband like Paula Ingalls. How wonderful. But there was a lot of abuse. There was poverty. There was a lot of fear, terror. And I was isolated. We lived in a commercial area. I lived across the street from two bars. They're still there. The cozy cabin with two K's was around the corner, and the You Need a Rest with UNEEDA is still there. I've checked. And it was next to the railroad station on one side, and on the other side was my uncle's gas station. So we played at the gas station and climbed up in the tires and ran out to the cars to give them things when they used to pump gas. So I always felt like when I went to school, I missed something. I didn't know how everybody had friends. I didn't know how they did that. How did they know each other? How did they know who to sit with at lunch? And it's because I realized later, well, they lived in neighborhoods, and they had people. They learned to make. They had friends around them. So that was a tough thing. So when my life changed a lot, the biggest thing is I learned to numb out to survive to an incredible degree. I used food. Later as a teenager, I used alcohol, cigarettes a little. But the main thing before with food at a young age and was just emotional, just really powerful how much you can not feel if your psyche needs it bad enough. And that is a way to lose your way later on when you're not in danger. So my life changed one day when I was 14. And I think I said my father was an alcoholic. Both of them weren't very educated. But he was very big in the fire department. Big Irish family. Everybody was a cop, and on the weekends they were in the fire department. Like that was the fam. That was the deal on Long Island. And one day he had a massive heart attack at home in front of us. And the fireman that he served with came and answered the call. The phone rang in our house the way it rang for the fires that he went to, and it was his call. And so our life really changed. He died suddenly. I have to admit that there were older siblings. I had siblings that were 20 years older, 19, 17, all the way down the ladder. And one of them did say, well, can you imagine if it had been mom? Because, of course, she was at least the parent that didn't drink. So my life changed, and frankly, it was a relief because a lot of the abuse stopped. But through this time, I would say I was not overweight until I was maybe approaching that preteen, like 9, 10, definitely by 11. I was starting to feel really bad comparing myself to other girls. They'd come back over the summer and they looked slimmed down or they dressed better. And, I realize now they had mothers who probably knew how to do that. My mother's mother died at 11 in the house I grew up in. And there was this constant presence of ghosts in the house, of not real ghosts, but people she would talk about who she lost in that house. And I realized that my mom stopped being parented at 11. So what a surprise that I kind of stopped getting parented at 11 and started gaining weight just when you need a mom to teach you other things. So I kept gaining weight. High school, adolescence, all these things that are changing. And I'm going to get Joey wants to be part of my story, but it's not his time yet. So we're gonna I have to wait till today, Joey. Well, you can be in today. So there was some relief, but I continued to puff up like you had an air pump, right, blowing me up. So by the time I was about 16, I was probably about 160 pounds, 5 foot 4. So constantly the shame, not wanting to shop, taking my brother's jeans because I didn't want to go try to find something that fit me. Just shame, shame, avoiding a lot of stuff. And that weird split of being extremely excelling academically and with other things. When I was 16, 2 years after my father died, my mother got diagnosed with leukemia. So she died within about 5 years. And basically, as her disease progressed, we were parenting ourselves. We were four teenagers at home. So it was hard. I went to college. I was numbed out from the neck down. I did school. I achieved, I got to college and I found out that people liked eating more in college. They kind of made it a big event, and so I gained more weight, probably got up to 200 pounds easily. Especially after my mother died, right before my senior year, I had high blood pressure. I was over 200 pounds. Boy, I was fading fast. Managed to finish college, got a job, was a magazine editor in New York. And then things started to go downhill. This big disconnect. I didn't know when I was feeling things. I didn't know how to handle conflict. I wouldn't get my job done. I just didn't know anything that you needed to know to navigate as an adult. Bouncing checks, no relationships. So I lost my job because of a number of things that were, I think, related to this program. And I got a job in at a magazine in Knoxville, Tennessee. And somehow, and it was a national magazine, somehow I knew, even as shut down as I was at going on 220, 230, I think my top weight was 240. I was so miserable because college was over and all the school was over, and I didn't know how to do life, and I didn't know how other people did life, but they were all off doing something. So I knew jobs. So I went, I moved to Knoxville, I took my cat and my car, and the same thing happened. I had a job, but it got worse. I was morose. I was later told, I can't imagine what I was like to be around, but I didn't know how to have friends. I didn't have any friends. I'd go to work and come home, not talk to a soul at night, all weekend. It was so lonely. It was so sad. So, in that December kind of 1984, maybe early, yeah, it must have been really early January 1985, I was hitting bottom. I was alone in an apartment that had a TV the size of like a small purse. I'm not kidding. One folding chair, an old couch, a bed on the floor. The blinds were always drawn. And there were bags and bags of empty bag, grocery bags, and empty wine bottles in the closet. My lights got shut off because I didn't manage my money. So I decided somehow, thank you, God, he gave me the guidance to go see a counselor. And I did. And she shocked me. She said she wouldn't see me unless I went to OA. I've never heard of a counselor doing that since. And so I went and she was there. What a surprise. So Thank goodness I found recovery at 24 and a half. It was in a church basement in Knoxville, Tennessee. We had two meetings a week.
10
We had
minutes,
one.
happy.
We had one. Thank you. We had one on a Sunday afternoon, so I could go to three meetings a week. They were in person. We didn't have the internet. We didn't have cell phone. We had regular phones. We had paper contactless. We had the big book and the 12 and 12 for AA. I think we might have had the Brown OA book. We didn't have any other OA books. Those all came later. We had pamphlets and we had the gray sheet. So in 10 months, I went to those meetings and I lost 100 pounds. And I called people around the clock. I don't know how these people survived me getting abstinent because every feeling I had, I called this one poor woman who was my sponsor. And eventually branched out. I was in an open cubby at the magazine, and the guy in front of me had been a speechwriter for Bill Clinton and went to Harvard. And the woman behind me was an art director who worked with up-and-coming artists, like the guy who was creating The Simpsons at the time. But they heard every word about my every time I had a feeling and a craving. They heard it all. But that's what they told me to do. I did what the people in the meeting said worked for them. I followed the gray sheet or whatever food plan. I weighed and measured. I had three meals and no snacks. And I worked the steps, started working the steps out of the big book with a sponsor. And I lost 100 pounds. However, I realized I was also an alcoholic. So 9 months later, I joined AA. So I've got 40 years there. And that really broadened my world. You know, that really, now I had lots more meetings and just a lot of wisdom that I started hearing. So I continued being very intensely involved in recovery. And of course, it benefited me in my work, in my personal life, but I just had a blast. You know, I was in my 20s. I went to AA dances. Everything that came up while it was devastating and hard, because things, the layers kept coming up, you know, lots, years of therapy around abuse, finding out what codependency is. I crashed more than one time because I was not drinking and not eating, and the layers were coming out of grief and shame and, you know, just everything. So I ended up going inpatient for treatment twice during that time, staying sober and abstinent, but nuts, you know, but really needed help with some things underneath. Found out that I had sex and love addiction. Got a sponsor, worked the program. You know, I was very fortunate that there was a community of recovering people. And there was a lot going on in the country at that time. So after about 6 years of that, I had another therapist change my life. She said, you don't need to come anymore. You need to go work in this field. So again, I'm devastated. I'm like, what do you mean? I'm not going to go to therapy anymore. I don't know what to do, you know. So, I had wanted to change careers, and I had met some people who were in ran treatment centers here in Arizona, and I called them up crying, and they told me to come out and do an internship. So that's how I came out here. I came out in 91 to an intern do an internship at the Meadows and became a counselor. So I wanted to talk a little bit about I had to but I continued to struggle with my relationships. Still got into a lot of acting out, frankly. Found some great support. Could you step out? Found some, sorry, could found some great support in a local sex and love addicts addiction group. And that became my primary program for a while. And the way my program in my life has gone is to be perfectly imperfect. I was in the right place. And they had these great Christmas and New Year's Eve parties. And so I went to one, and I was so glad I had all these friends, except that I asked a guy from work that I barely knew, and he came home with me that night, and I got pregnant. So this is my journey up and down. So that daughter called me about 20 minutes ago. She's 30. So there's always, but I used my program. Whatever happened, I used my program. My sponsor went to child support hearings with me. People in the program gave me baby clothes, you know. So I kept working the different programs. Eventually, I met my husband, who just walked in with groceries, and I shoot him out. I got married, I had another child. So I've had a lot of the blessings, the spiritual awakenings for me of the program
5 minutes.
are things like, how do I have any relationships, let alone an intimate one? How on earth will I have a family and not be alone the rest of my life, let alone just know how to function? So part of my story is that I got real busy with the good things in life, kids, church. I just went off my food plan when I was pregnant. It just lost its priority. I didn't go to enough meetings, didn't work it anymore. But I was busy with a lot of fun things. So, little by little, slowly, again, I became aware that I was numbing out, that my clothes weren't fitting, that people would notice when I hadn't seen them in a while. And I started to finally, little by little, realize I had relapsed. I had gained a lot of weight. The kids were getting older. They didn't need me as much. I was scared. I kept trying and I couldn't put a day together. And I'd had years of abstinence and years at one healthy weight. So, but I started to hear about things outside the one meeting a week here I did. There were people that went on phone meetings, and there were people that went on the internet meetings. This was all foreign to me at the time. There were people that had places, people had meetings every day. And I got on in desperation to my first internet meeting. I don't know why I even picked it. And somebody told me about an upcoming 12 Days of Christmas marathon. And I got on that meeting every night for 12 nights, and my life changed. I realized I could not make this program work because I was trying to sit home, and say, okay, tomorrow it starts. And maybe I'll go to a meeting Saturday, but not really sure, and do anything. So I started going. And by the end of that 12 days, I said, this is it. The magic's back. So, and that led me to this big book meeting. And another huge step for me was I hadn't called anybody to tell them my food, anything like that, for years. And as soon as I did, I was able, the compulsion was removed. So again, for me, both times, it worked when I finally realized I have to do all or most of the things that these other people are saying work for them. The more I did, the better it got. So I thought I couldn't go to meetings every day. I thought I couldn't plan my food because I'm busy working and et cetera, et cetera. But I do. I don't do it perfect, but I do as many of the tools as I can. But it's taking time. I've spent two-thirds of my life in program, and my body's 65, and it's not 25. So I've lost slowly. I'd say from my highest weight, I'm down about 55 pounds, which is great, considered that I gained and just stayed, and then maybe went up and down a little, but could never really sustain abstinence. Some of the other things that I wanted to share, and how much we got?
2 minutes.
2 minutes. So some of the other things I wanted to share is sponsorship. I get really weird about sponsorship. I always have. I think it goes back to my authority stuff. Like, I would pick somebody and then be scared of them or not be able to talk to them. If somebody wants me to be their sponsor, I get all freaked out, because again, it's these relationships where a lot of the underlying issues of addiction are. But I realized today that if I stay in the middle of program and I do it like I do a shower every day, if I do these things, enough of them, I don't have to have all that fear and self-centeredness and insecurity and taking things personally, because I'm living on a different basis. I'm not doing it. God's doing it. And he took the compulsion for food. He took the compulsion for codependency and sex and love addiction, for alcohol. And he took away other things in different time periods that were huge. There have been some huge turning points in my program. One is convinced there's a God. That's a personal issue. But the demonstrations I've seen are overwhelming. I got myself in a bad relationship when I was newly abstinent and moved in with some guy and then didn't have the money to move out. And I figured out I needed $300. And I finally asked somebody in my OA group in Knoxville to go out for coffee. And I was sweating and just struggling. What do? I got to get out of this, get another apartment. And she was like the third or fourth person I asked to borrow $300. And she sat there and she looked at me and she said, you want to borrow $300? Yes. She said she'd been having dreams for weeks about the number three. And she loaned me the $300 and her dreams went away. The other thing would be just and that's time. The other thing would be just the realization that whatever has happened, no matter how bad or how good, to really get that God was really right there all the time. That changed things profoundly for me. So thank you.